Hey, y'all, and welcome back to Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. I'm your host, Lacey Dunn, registered dietitian, here to spread the scientific knowledge in the world of fitness and nutrition. I'm so excited about today's episode, so make sure you listen in and get ready to learn. Welcome back, guys, to Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. Today, I have Mike Milner. I am super excited to have him on my podcast. I have actually had the pleasure and honor to be a guest on his podcast. So now it is his turn to be the guest and share his expertise. And you guys, I'm super stoked to have him on. So Mike, thank you so much for taking your time to come on my podcast. And I would love if you could give my listeners kind of a brief background about who you are, what you do, and what has you so passionate about health and fitness.
Yeah, so first of all, thanks so much for having me. It's truly an honor. And I'll try and keep it brief, although I have a tendency to be pretty long-winded. But Mike Milner, I am the owner of Peak Optimization Performance, which is a nutrition coaching company that I started 2 years ago. I've been in the industry for about 10 years, just started my own business about 2 years ago. And really, it all stemmed from my own personal journey. I was somebody who was previously an athlete growing up and kind of continued playing sports all throughout college. And once sports ended and I kept the same habits that I picked up on in college, like eating and drinking pretty unfavorably, I found myself kind of at 250 pounds and pretty lost and confused. It felt like it happened overnight, although obviously it didn't. But you know, it really was like one morning I woke up, looked in the mirror, and I was like, I don't recognize myself. And it wasn't so much the physical, it was honestly because a lot of my identity was wrapped up in sports, like, you know, my friends and my social circle. And so it was more of the insecurity, it was more of the fear of going and seeing people and having questions about like what happened to you. And that led me down the path of how can I lose weight as fast as humanly possible, which didn't go so well. And, so I was a chronic dieter for a long time. I felt like the secret was just like, let me get under 200 pounds and then everything will be fine again. And went through that process and would get under 200 pounds and then rebound, and spent years in that cycle, developed a disordered relationship with food and some body image issues, and kind of went through the gamut of mental anguish and decided that I am a pretty intelligent person and that I should be able to educate myself on why this is happening. So that was like the first, all right, I want to figure this all out for myself. I actually became a personal trainer and started working in a small gym, coaching clients on the training side of things while I was still trying to figure out the nutrition. And that seemed to always be my hurdle. So went all in on the nutrition side. I got pretty much every certification that I possibly could, from ISSN to, you know, precision nutrition to NCI, and just became obsessed with learning more. And through kind of figuring out my own path, I started to realize that there was a disconnect in the information and the application. Like, we kind of know what to do, but very few people can actually do it and sustain it. So in our society, we typically don't have a weight loss problem. We have a weight maintenance problem. Like, most people can diet and successfully lose weight, but not many people can successfully keep it off. And that was where I became really passionate about the psychology of dieting and why there's this disconnect between knowing and doing. How can we create sustainable behavior change? And I really went heavy on like the mindset side of things. And that's really the foundation for my company, for what we do, and what I'm super passionate about.
Fabulous. And I'm so excited for you. I know it takes a lot of effort and hard work and time and patience to write a book. So huge props to you for that. In regards to that, what would you say was your biggest obstacle for gathering all your thoughts together?
Oh man. So yeah, the book process, it was funny because I was actually told from a young age that I wasn't a good writer. And I believed that for a long time. And it was just something that a high school teacher said to me. I don't think she really meant anything by it, but it became it became like this internal dialogue that stuck. And it wasn't until I was like working for another company, I had this writing assignment and I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I can't write. And then I realized it kind of all made sense. I was like, well, I was told I wasn't a good writer. I believed it. So then I didn't write anything and it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. So from that point on, I actually fell in love with writing. So it seemed like the logical thing for me to do. I didn't realize how challenging it would actually be. I'm like, you know what? I love to write. I'm just going to do this every day. The biggest challenge was that I wasn't always motivated to write. And so, and this is kind of like tying it into fitness, like oftentimes we're not motivated to eat well, we're not motivated to work out, but you got to show up and do it. So that was really the thing I thought that once I like flipped the switch, like I'm going to write a book, thinking that I would just wake up and be super inspired every morning. And that definitely was not the case. So I had to be very diligent about, all right, I'm going to write for at least an hour every single day. It doesn't matter what the words are that I'm feeling or not feeling, like just get something out, because I needed to be structured in this process. Otherwise, if I was waiting for inspiration to hit or motivation to hit, I probably wouldn't have made it very far. And even with that, it still took way longer than I expected.
Wow. Well, the reason I asked is because I'm writing a book. Surprise, oh, nice. Guys. And definitely, I feel you on that. Motivation is kind of like not there sometimes, but I'm not forcing it. I do my very best if I have pure passion and motivation. So that's what I'm doing. But yeah, woo, props to you. Takes time. And I'm excited to chat and dive more into the components of your book. So you mentioned personalities and matching personality types to help with better compliance. So can you dive more deeper into that?
Yeah, for sure. So at the end of the day, like when we talk about fitness and nutrition, it's all about consistency and adherence. Like we have a million different methods, right? There's certain principles that have to apply, certain principles that we can't circumvent. However, the method to get there, the vehicle that we use, is very dependent on the individual. And if you just think about this practically, like we're all unique in our lifestyle and our habits and what we prefer. So like our personal preferences, you know, life experiences, our metabolisms are all different. Our hormonal profiles are all different. So when we try and, you know, put people in a box, it doesn't work out very well. And that was my, you know, the struggle that I had was I kept trying to, you know, take these different dietary approaches that seemed popular. They were like the shiny new object at the time. And I could sustain it for a short period of time, but it never lasted. And that was really where I started to look at how can we create better compliance and diving into the concept of, you know, behavior change. And one of the first kind of light bulb moments for me was actually my first mentor, who is Christian Thibodeau, who's a T Nation writer. And he kind of opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, there was actually nothing wrong with me. He's like, your personality type is such that you kind of jump from program to program. You're a program hopper, and that's nothing, it's not a personality flaw. It's just how you're wired. So it was like the first time that somebody told me that it wasn't my fault. And I took that and ran with it. And I started to dive into the research about personality types and what that says about our neurotransmitter balance. And then how can we use that information to create certain protocols that would help somebody stay more compliant? And just an example would be an individual who's dopamine dominant. So somebody who's, you know, highly potentiated by any increase in dopamine, which is like that pleasure response in the brain, that reward center. So an individual who's dopamine dominant would look like an extrovert, somebody who's very exploratory, a risk taker, very goal oriented, competitive, natural leader, somebody who likes to set ambitious goals. And when we look at that person from like a training perspective, they're the ones who are like, I'm going to outwork you. I'm going to lift heavy weights and add more weight to the bar, almost like a, you know, power lifter type. That personality type, if we try and give them a protocol that's very methodical, boring, repetitive, the same, you know, let's say they're on a macro plan, it's like, all right, we're just going to do the same numbers every single day. They're going to lose motivation. They're going to lose interest. They're not going to stay engaged in the process because it's very against their nature. They're the type that, like I said, they like to set ambitious goals. They like to win. They're this extroverted, outgoing person. So if I'm like, all right, we're just going to take this slow and steady, you know, same numbers every day, just same meals every day. And that's working very much against their nature. But on the flip side of that, if I have somebody who's higher anxiety, somebody who might have lower serotonin, which is, you know, responsible for the sense of well-being. So if we have somebody who low serotonin would be more a higher anxiety type of person. Well, the best cure for anxiety would be predictability and repetition and organization and structure. So for that person, yeah, maybe if we keep them, you know, all right, we're going to do the same set of macros every single day. We're going to do the same kind of meal structure every single day. Now we can start to, you know, implement different protocols that align with that personality type. So that's kind of just like a high level view of when we look at somebody's personality, how can we kind of implement certain strategies that keep them more naturally engaged and actually enjoying the process more because it's working in line with their nature.
That's so interesting. Now, in regards to coaching, because I know you coach others, what would you say are the hardest personalities to try and work with?
Yeah,
and what do you find are the biggest obstacles for them?
Yeah, so there's personality type that's very more emotionally driven. They make a lot of decisions based off of feel and instinct. Typically, they have higher levels of glutamate, which is kind of like that neurotransmitter that's our emotional amplifier, also plays a role in memory. But for that person, they definitely are more introverted, a little bit higher anxiety, but they're very emotionally driven. And those individuals can be very hard on themselves. And what happens is the reason that they're challenging to coach is because they will shut down if something doesn't go right, because they don't want to lose, they don't want to let their coach down. So they feel like, oh, well, if I did something that they perceive as like quote unquote off plan, and they feel bad about it, they're not going to, you know, run and tell you. They're typically just going to kind of go into their shell and not reach out and kind of feel bad and be more internally, you know, more internal thinking and
so
ruminating.
So the people pleaser, basically.
Exactly. So it's like the people pleaser. They don't want to let you down, or you know, they'll try and only report like the positives because they're only going to say what they think you want to hear versus what's actually going on. So sometimes you have to, you know, really build a strong relationship to get, you know, peel back some of those layers and get to the root of what's happening. They're not just going to come right out and say it. Where we have like some of the type A personalities who are the dopamine dominant, like they're going to talk about themselves without much, you know, you don't really have to pull it out of them. They're just going to offer up that information. The people pleasers are typically more reserved in that regard. So you might have to do, you know, that's where coaching relationship, the connection piece and being able to, you know, approach people as individuals is so important, because oftentimes it's really getting like five layers deep. That's where like the real magic starts to happen.
That's so interesting. And I find also it's a combination of personality and genetics and then environmental factors that play such a role. So have you looked into the comp gene at all?
Yeah, I haven't looked too deep into that, but I totally agree. I think that when we look at, there's no denying the genetic component. And then there's also environment is huge. And we see this with things like how our brain responds in different environments and just the impact that that can have. And obviously, you know, when we talk about upbringing and learned behaviors and life experiences, like, and that's really where I wanted to get the point across of how individualized it really truly is because of all these different variables.
Yeah, it really is. And just so my listeners know, with the comp gene, if you have a slow comp, that can cause a slow degradation of estrogen, norepinephrine, and epinephrine. So those are your flight or flight hormones, essentially. And those individuals, if you have a slow comp gene, it can result in slower degradation and higher cortisol levels, higher cortisol output, and those people can have trouble in regards to managing stress and have an increased risk more for burnout. So then I do find that those people, especially when you're working with clients, it's about managing stress as much as you can and putting in self-care practices and also not throwing a bunch of things at one person all at once. And then somebody who may have a fast comp, they may easily be able to run through the estrogen, your flight or flight hormones, and be able to get over things super easily. Like say Karen from work decides to be super bitchy towards you. Well, that person with the fast comp might easily be able to get over it. Like no skin off their back, like be able to get over it. But the person with a slow comp, AKA me, might take it extremely sensitive to it, may take it at heart, and may take them a while in order to get over the situation.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I think it's also important to illustrate that. Talk about like norepinephrine, epinephrine, you know, especially when we're talking about epinephrine and the kind of lifespan that it's supposed to take, like very much to be released in an acute sense, right? And we want it to, which is why, you know, when we talk about like the adrenaline receptors are very easily desensitized if we have adrenaline activated for too long. So then stress management, like you said, becomes even more critical. We, you know, we kind of, as practitioners, we like harp on that all the time about manage stress. But I think when you have tangible kind of example or process that, you know, we're kind of built for survival. So the stress response typically is more, you know, designed for an acute stressor and not very well equipped for a chronic. stress, then it becomes even more important to kind of hone in on some of those parasympathetic inducing activities.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of dipping more people into that parasympathetic. I did want to dive even further into psychology and mindset with you. So let's talk about a fixed versus growth mindset, because I know this can be a game changer for getting somebody on the right path to not only making the right decisions, but believing in themselves and actually pursuing their goals in a healthy way.
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in starting with mindset first. I think it's such a synergistic relationship when we talk about psychology and physiology, and it can actually go both ways. So I can change my psychology, which will change my physiology, and I can also change my physiology, which will change my psychology. So I think that it just gives us some more tools to play with. But we know from research that having more of a growth mindset is directly correlated with your ability to succeed within your fitness, within, you know, really anything that you're trying to accomplish. The issue is that, you know, we often have a growth mindset in certain areas and a fixed mindset in others. So it's not like once you have a growth mindset that you're set and you're good, like across all different aspects of life. So for example, you know, I might have a very fixed mindset in my ability to control my fitness. Like I just believe that it's all genetics. Why even bother? No matter what I do, I can't lose weight. I can't get the body comp that I want. That would be a very fixed mindset. On the flip side, I might have a very growth mindset in my career. Like, you know what? I'm going to ride escalate up the corporate ladder, and I'm going to be very successful and make a lot of money. And I believe these things to be true, which would be growth mindset. And the importance of being able to facilitate and foster more of a growth mindset, there's a ton of literature on the, you know, connection between growth mindset and success within your fitness. And it's something that we can pull from experience. So being able to look and say, okay, well, I was able to have a growth mindset in my career and use tangible examples. This is one of the reasons why I think fitness is such a powerful vehicle, because we can use, you know, the fact that we showed up on day one and we like barely knew how to deadlift. And now on, you know, day 365 or whatever, we can deadlift 400 pounds or whatever it may be. But we can use that process where we kept showing up and we got better at something as a way to pull that growth mindset into other areas of our life. In the beginning, we might have a fixed mindset in fitness, so we have to be more intentional about how to facilitate a growth mindset, which might be reflecting on where in my life did I achieve something that maybe I wasn't good at first. Maybe it was learning an instrument or learning a language or, you know, doing well in school or, you know, like I said, with the career, maybe you got a job and you didn't think you were qualified, but then you learned and you started to thrive in that role. Now I can pull from that experience and apply it to my own fitness. Yes, I do have control. You know, I am in the driver's seat. And things like mindfulness and practicing gratitude and journaling have also been shown to facilitate more of a growth mindset. So that's something that, you know, is maybe considered more on the woo-woo side of things, but I'm a big believer in it. And there's a lot of research to back that up. So I think it's cool when we have something that's based off of anecdote and research, and we can kind of tie both of those things in. But I'm a big believer in mindfulness practices for that reason of, if nothing else, we're going to kind of put ourselves more in control and have more kind of internal confidence and self-belief that we do have control over our destiny.
Exactly. We do. And in reality, the thoughts that we have dictate how we perceive the actions that we make, as well as the things that happen to us. So we can control we can't control what's thrown at us and what happens in our lives, but we can control how we react to that and how we use that situation to either harm us or help us. So I'm a huge believer in that.
Yeah, and that's literally like your perception becomes your reality. And that's, at the end of the day, we can control, like you said, how we respond to a situation, which is literally controlling our reality. So if we can change our perception, or, you know, we can take something and reframe it into more of a positive or use it to our benefit, we're literally changing our reality just by changing our thoughts. So there's kind of like this connection between, you know, thoughts, emotion, action, and mindfulness kind of creates space where we can be aware of those thoughts and emotions and then create space for a conscious choice as to how we want to act.
And it takes effort to be able to even change your mindset and how you react to different situations, because we have neuroplasticity, right? So our brain is ingrained in going after one specific response. So say that your brain is wired when you are sad to run to food. Well, that is a wire that you're going to have to rewire, and you're going to have to create a new pattern in order to change both the mindset and the actual response.
Yeah, that's a concept that I think is one of the most empowering things to learn about, is that we do, you know, it can, again, when we talk about perception, we can look at that and say, well, this pattern has been ingrained in me over years. But then we can look at, I have control to change that pattern. I can literally create new neuronal connections and pathways, and I can rewire my brain to my advantage. And you understand that your perception is your reality. It just opens up so many doors for opportunity and growth. And so, yes, it does take intentional action. And in the beginning, it might, you're kind of resisting against falling back into those natural tendencies, which is why, you know, habits are pretty difficult to change. It's like, I always use the analogy when we talk about, you know, the pathway, the neuronal pathway that exists. It's like, you have this cue, this trigger, then this behavior, and then this reward, and that establishes a habit that, you know, you might have had for years. Maybe it's like you talked about, you have this emotional response and then you run to food. The first time that happened, it was like you rode your bike over a dirt path. It didn't leave much of a divot. By the, you know, years of that same pattern happening, you've got a pretty deep divot. But through neuroplasticity, through knowing that we can actually change that pathway, that we can create new connections, that we can rewire our brain, it becomes empowering that I can actually patch up that one divot and I can create a new divot that is more in line with my values and what I actually want out of life.
Love it. Now, I know a lot of people, they struggle with, let's be real, there's everybody and their mother trying to tell them what they should do for diet, for nutrition, for exercise, for supplements, you name it. And getting past a fixed mindset on this is the right way or this is the wrong way, what are key critical steps that people can make in order to break through that mindset and decipher through information?
Yeah, so I like to try and have people filter everything through their own personal lens. And that's where we hear these kind of grandiose statements as to what diet is best, or, you know, it's very enticing when, you know, your neighbor lost 20 pounds doing something. You're like, oh, what did you do? I need to do that. Even though we can conceptually understand that we're totally different. However, it's just this, again, when we talk about the way that our brains are wired, like we have this instant gratification that's very appealing, and it's hard to delay that to find our own path. So I always try and look at, first of all, look at the longevity. Trying to see the big picture and trying to understand that fitness and health is a lifelong pursuit, and that there's really no finish line. You know, we can have goals and checkpoints along the way, but really each goal is just kind of a new starting point for the next goal. And if we look at it more as a lifelong pursuit, we can start to filter things through our own personal lens of, well, does this feel sustainable? Is this something that I actually enjoy? I think enjoyment is one of the most overlooked pieces of the puzzle. And I don't mean like I enjoy eating pizza, so that's all I want to eat. I mean, you know, what I'm doing, how does this make me feel? I'm talking about, do I notice better energy? Looking at biofeedback, do I find myself more present with my family? You know, what are the advantages internally? You know, do I have these intrinsic motivators? And then looking at, you know, the longevity piece, does this feel sustainable? Is this something that I actually enjoy doing? That can help you start to weed out some of the misinformation, because, you know, I've had clients who have come to me and they're like, I know that I'm not supposed to be eating carbs, but I just love carbs. I'm like, okay, well, let's unpack that. Why don't you think you're supposed to be eating carbs? And then once we start to peel back those layers, it's just, you know, a belief that was instilled in them for one reason or the other. But once we get to the root of it, they realize that, you know what, this isn't serving me. And, you know, I always look at it as, if that was going to be the best fit for you, then why does it feel like such an internal conflict is happening? So there's like this cognitive dissonance that it creates, where we're kind of battling against ourselves as to what we're doing and what we want to be doing. And that's really difficult to live with. So as we see with most protocols that are very restrictive or very kind of like one size fits all, people can use discipline and willpower for a certain period of time, but inevitably they run out. And then all of a sudden they end up back at square one. So trying to look at, you know, more of the big picture, trying to filter that through your own personal lens as to, how does this make me feel? Can I attach some intrinsic motivators? Can I look at the energy that I'm getting from this, the fulfillment I'm getting from this, and then do I actually enjoy this process? And trying to embrace the process as a whole, realizing that that's really where the gift truly lies. And so I know it's like more abstract, but I typically start with the mindset first before we kind of like dive into more of like the physiological nuances of each person.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I think one of the hardest things that people want to know the answer right away. They want to know what they can do to reach a goal. But in reality, the first question that should be is, why do you want to reach that goal, right? So what is the change that you want to make? Where do you want your life to be? And why are you wanting to learn more? Or why are you confused? Like, you have to dive into the why in order to be able to actually get to the right path to making those changes happen. And I'm glad you also mentioned willpower and dedication, because I think a lot of people, they get stuck in focusing on motivation for being the route that's going to help them reach their goal. And if you focus on that motivation is going to die out, right? So it's not always going to be there. So that's where discipline and that consistency comes in. The neuroplasticity, the forming the habits, sustaining the habits comes in.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that motivation, I think one of the benefits of having like a mindfulness practice in your life is you realize that emotions are fleeting and you can kind of just witness them come and go and realize that, oh, okay, if I'm relying on motivation, which is an emotion, which is fleeting, I'm setting myself up for failure. It's the same thing when you're experiencing sadness. Oftentimes we feel like this is going to be our forever state, but if we can just sit and mindfully pay attention to it, we see it pass just like a cloud passing by. And that becomes, you know, it gives us this vote of confidence that I don't need to rely on my emotional state to do something. And that's where, like you talked about, we don't need motivation to be present. And when we start to create these habits, all of a sudden it becomes an automatic behavior. So we're really not dependent on any sort of emotion. It's like you're going to brush your teeth regardless of whether you're happy, sad, or indifferent. It's the same thing with any sort of healthy habit that we establish. And we create this you know, neural pathway that ingrains it in us. We don't need to rely on something like motivation or external validation or anything like that. It just becomes an intrinsic driver of the behavior.
I definitely know that a lot of people struggle with emotions being what hinders them from reaching their goals. And so I do want to give just some brief little baby steps for my listeners, ways that you can better conquer your emotions. Step one, name the emotion, name the feeling. You have to be able to recognize it in order to get rid of it. Step two, carve out time in order to feel that emotion. So giving yourself an opportunity to actually be upset if you're upset, be angry if you're angry. Don't keep it in. Cry if you need to. Step three, you need to accept that this experience may be confusing and hard for you. It's okay. It's normal to be sad. It's normal to be angry. And it's normal to not necessarily even know what's going on, right? Step four, acknowledge that your feelings are worthy. You are always allowed and it's always valid for you to feel the way that you feel. Step five, notice if you are taking on other people's feelings. So if somebody they may be projecting on you, notice that it may not necessarily be something that you did. It may be something that they are struggling with internally on themselves that they are projecting on you. Step six, get curious about your feelings. Step seven, talk about your feelings. So talk to someone else, write it down, journal it. And then step eight, learn to trust yourself and your feelings and be able to recognize what helps you versus what harms you in managing it.
Yeah, that was so well said. I love that. And, you know, go through very similar stuff with myself and with my clients. I actually love the process of writing it down and actually describing it, naming it, and then even the physical associations with it. So maybe it's shortness of breath or tightness in the chest and actually identifying how this feels in my body. But that was very well said.
Thank you. Yeah, we are very complex, intricate human beings. And in the end, it comes down to mind, body, and soul. And so having to integrate, putting effort and care and love into every single one of those processes is very, very important.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And I think oftentimes we try and separate those things, which, as I talked about, like there's this synergistic relationship between all of them. And we often try and, you know, separate the physical. Well, I'm going to, you know, if I can get this external goal, if I can get this 10 pounds off, then I'll be happy, right? And it's like we've now separated the physical from the psychological, from the emotional, from the spiritual. And we can't exist that way. So we often are left unfulfilled. Even if we do accomplish that external goal, we realize that it didn't bring us the fulfillment that we thought it would. And if we start from a place of being happy and loving ourselves as we are, then we can pursue from a place of self-care and self-appreciation versus a self, you know, place of, oh, well, I'll be happy when ... And we know that typically it ends up in a kind of, you know, we end up either pivoting to a different goal because that didn't give us the fulfillment, or we end up pushing the goalpost back and we're like, oh, well, it wasn't 10 pounds, maybe it's 20 pounds, and it can create this vicious cycle.
Yeah, you have to start from a place of love. If you start from a place of hate, you're never going to actually get to loving yourself and loving your body. You have to establish your self-worth and your own acceptance in who you are, not what you look like, not what you weigh, not what your level, what the level of success that the world tries to tell you. It's always got to come from you. Now, I did want to dive a little bit into personalities and macros versus intuitive eating. So can you talk about kind of the connections and who you find works best for each?
Yeah. So I often think that the argument, like most things in like the nutrition world, where we typically have these debates over one versus the other, it's always context dependent. The way that I look at macros versus intuitive eating is they're both tools that we should have in our toolbox. And I think that there's the tendency for certain personality types to become very obsessive and dependent and almost married to the numbers. Like they can't exist without numbers. And for that person, learning the skill of intuitive eating and practicing that is probably a good idea. I think that everybody should spend time doing both, just as, you know, as a learning experience and being able to have multiple tools in the toolbox. I think that macros are super valuable for creating awareness around food and portion size and reading food labels and starting to connect the dots between maybe how certain, you know, macronutrients make you feel. Do you feel better with higher protein? Do you feel more energy with more carbs? Do you feel better digestion with lower carbs and higher fat? Like, you know, whatever the case may be for the individual. Intuitive eating obviously connects us more with what our body's telling us, and trusting our body and understanding our hunger and satiety signals, and understanding that we can trust ourselves around certain foods so that we don't have to feel tension around there's a bag of chips there and we don't know how to handle it because we're so married to the numbers. And it's, you know, going out to a restaurant and feeling anxious, obviously when restaurants open back up, like feeling anxious that we don't know how to track this, or we don't know how to put this into our macros, and it creates, you know, an additional stressor. So I think that there's certain personality types who are very detail oriented, and they become obsessive with like hitting every single macro down to the gram. For those individuals, I like to have them spend some time practicing intuitive eating. But if we're just speaking more like general principles, I think that having both skill sets is important, because I just look at that as we shouldn't be talking about macros versus intuitive eating. We should be talking about macros and intuitive eating, as they're both important depending on the context and depending on the individual.
Awesome. Love it. Well, thank you so much for all your expertise and your knowledge. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about regarding your book, or anything that you wanted to share to my listeners that might help in regards to them conquering their life and their goals?
Yeah, I think that like the biggest objective that I had for writing the book was to helping people go through the process of understanding their own individual needs and not getting so caught up in the kind of the shiny new object or fad diets. And, you know, obviously it was a personal journey of mine. So, you know, if it's like, who are you writing this book for? It was really for myself 10 years ago, person that was confused and lost and insecure. And, you know, it could have saved me a lot of hardship that I went through psychologically and from just like my physical progress. But ultimately it's just that, you know, embracing your uniqueness as an individual, looking at it from a big picture perspective, understanding, you know, the mastery of self first and kind of taking that mindset first approach. And that's really what I tried to get out of or have people take away from the book. So hopefully that message gets across. I think that it's definitely complex, and there's a lot of different nuances to it. So I know we could always go down like different rabbit holes, but if we're just talking about like 30,000 foot view, understanding your own individual needs, understanding the mindset that's going to create long-term sustainable change, that's really the point that I hope that I got across in the book.
Fabulous. I'm so excited for you, and I hope my listeners are able to get a hold of your book. Can you tell them where they can find you, follow you, and order your book?
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is at personalitydietbook.com, and they can connect with me on Instagram, which is coach@coach_Mike_Milner. My website is neurotypetraining.com. There's some cool information on there just about, you know, different personality types. And if you want to kind of dig in a little bit more on like the neurotransmitter side of things, those are all the best places to connect with me and read a little bit more.
Sounds fabulous. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.